Today, this ain't normal. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is post covering finance and property news. Well, here we are with the Fed keeping rates on halt, gold running up and silver following, and of course, the question of, well, what's really going on? Well, timely then to share with you the conversation I just had with Nuggets News, because we've done the first of our economic updates and we went deep into a lot of these issues. There's a lot to talk about. And I think there are two themes I want to underscore. The first is that the government, of course, is always here to help, well, maybe not. And secondly, the Trump neo-mercantile philosophy, which is now being rolled out, is having significant and profound impacts, not just on the US economy, but on the global economy and global relationships. Trying to make sense of this, of course, is a challenge. But there are some very important thematics that we touch on in this show. This is my edit of the show, and I added in a few extra slides. Enjoy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News. We are back with our friend Martin coming to us from over in the UK, diving into all the latest in the Aussie housing market and economy. How was your break, Martin?
Yeah, pretty good. Very busy. Of course, a lot going on. And it is interesting to see how things are shifting. And hope you had a good break your end.
Yeah, I enjoyed a few weeks off, which I haven't done in ages, which is good. And yeah, precious metals. I know you've got some slides on them. Isn't that a sign of kind of the markets breaking and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I wanted just sort of to set the conversation up by saying, you know, Ray Dalio makes a really interesting comment. He made it quite recently. Fiat money eventually leads to the debasement of money. And he also says that real money is gold and, you know, it isn't really the stocks. And if you compare the value of the S&P 500 today with gold, it's actually crashed. US consumer confidence down, stocks at all-time high, and the amount of money supply in the US and in other countries, very, very high. So we're in a very, very weird situation, and that's what I'm going to try and explore today. And I guess a good place to start the conversation is what Trump is doing. And, you know, the first slide is basically just making the point that we went through Tina, there's no alternative, then Taco, Trump always chickens out, and now we've got Tuna. Trump usually negates announcements, which is the latest, you know, but you got to say things are crazy, partly because of what Trump has been doing, but partly because we've got this debasement trade now, and there are big questions about the future of the US dollar and the future of fiat currencies, and I think we've been speaking about this for some time, but it's really beginning to come to a head. Interesting, Jerome Powell, who announced that there was no rate change from the Fed overnight, made the point that he doesn't regard the price of gold as significant or symbolic at all, but I think others might have a different view.
Yeah, I'll share some more thoughts on precious metals when we get to those slides as well. But next up here, you've got Greenland.
Well, I just wanted to say, of course, Greenland was very much, you know, in vogue over the last week. And just to explain for those who may not have appreciated just how strategic Greenland is, this is actually showing that if you had missiles coming from, you know, Russia or China into the US, well, guess what? They go over Greenland. So Greenland is at the sort of the top of the curve, as it were. But it is interesting, again, Trump, you know, pushing really hard and then suddenly pulling back, not quite sure why or how. But strategically, Greenland is important. And it's just worth highlighting from this view, you can see just how close, you know, these various North Polar areas are to each other. So it's not the way it's normally represented in the normal map projections. And Greenland is a lot smaller than many people think.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a bit of a different take. I think it's all part of this North American technate that was spoken about years ago by like Elon's grandparents and just how they, you know, a step closer towards one world government. We've already got the EU. They want to make everything, you know, in part America under their control. And they say it's for the, you know, the commodities and resources or these political reasons. But it is just insane to watch how they're plainly ignoring international law and just kidnapping, you know, presidents and just, oh, we're going to take that country and the people in that country are like, you know, what the hell kind of thing. It's crazy watching this play out.
Yeah, well, the Monroe Doctrine, which of course now called the Donroe Doctrine, is basically saying we are going to own the Western Hemisphere. You know, we are going to take control and nobody's going to come and play in our sandpit, as it were. And there is a big question. And that takes us, interestingly, to the next slide. Of course, at Davos, you know, I always call it Davros because it seems to me that all of these big guys, you know, and their power and everything else. But there was a really interesting speech from Mark Carney, who is now the president, prime minister, or whatever you want to call him, of Canada. But, of course, used to be the guy in charge of... Well, the Bank of England,
Bank of England.
But he made the point that, you know, if you're a country that is not at the table and not involved in some of these discussions, you are on the menu. And I think that's very important. And he was talking about the disruption. You know, there's a really significant question about the structure of the way that countries work. The old agreements, the old world order has fallen away. It's about naked power. It's about all of that stuff. And it's very interesting that he called it out. And if you have not seen his speech, folks, it is worth listening to. It is quite an astonishing example of what people, I think, are probably thinking. And for me, it was very significant.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy times with that Board of Peace and as well. And just, it's just, yeah, like I said, it's like we're living in an alternate reality sometimes with how quickly they're moving forward with just kind of taking over the world and doing whatever they want.
Well, it's a bit like The Apprentice, isn't it? You know, in real time, and you know, that's really, maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's all made for television. Talking about made for television, the other thing that's worth talking about made for television is China. So China, of course, they announced a significant uptake in terms of their overall trade and exports, not to the US, but to everybody else. And so this cartoon, I thought, summed it rather well. You know, never mind Washington, what they're doing. The truth is that the giant from China, trade and commerce, is heading everywhere else. And of course, we've got UK over in China at the moment. Carney went to China. Germany went to China. France went to China. Everybody is now wanting to actually cozy up with China. And Trump doesn't like it.
Yeah, and I want to add Venezuela to that list as well, because they, you know, they cut ties with Israel. America puts sanctions on them. So then they start selling more oil to other people. And then they go, oh, you're selling oil to other people. And it's just, it's all this kind of cover story as well to what's actually going on.
Yeah, it is. And the problem is, of course, that we do live in a multipolar world. That means that the question of the dominance of the US dollar is now very much in question, and we'll come onto that shortly. The truth is, of course, that China is the world manufacturer of almost everything. And if you think about cars, and if you think about solar panels, as well as other tech, they are absolutely preeminent now. Interesting, Tesla just announced overnight when they announced their results, that, you know, overall results down a bit, but they're pivoting away from building cars towards effectively robotics and other physical AI, which I thought was quite interesting. So in a way, even Tesla's now given up on the building of the car story, because China is, well, preeminent. Of course, by the way, just in passing, China has huge, huge power resources. They've been investing more in power, in their power and capability, so they can make stuff and run AI at much cheaper rates than many other countries. But
yes. Okay. Moving along. So Dutch pensions cutting treasury holdings.
Interestingly, now this question of the preeminence of the dollar, we are seeing now signs, and that, you know, this is one example, a Dutch pension, it has cut the US treasury stake. Other people are now questioning, well, is this the end of the US as a sort of, you know, prime investment area? Now, it must be said that there are more international holders of US debt at the moment, particularly treasuries, than ever. So, but that's because they've been issuing a lot more. But there has now started to be some pivots. Some people are saying, well, maybe it's not investable. And maybe that's to do with Trump. Maybe it's to do with other opportunities. But I do think this is a very significant development.
Yeah, and you've got some more good slides on this as well, which I want to share some thoughts on when we get to.
Yeah, and now, of course, just on the world debt story, this is just highlighting, I think, that we've got this massive amount of liquidity being created. You know, the share of the global debt in the US at 34.5%. Interestingly, if you look down the list, you know, what's the share, what's the value? It's fascinating to see. I'll make the point, Australia, only 51% of general government debt to GDP. So we've got plenty of capacity, you know, relative to other people. But you can see here that some countries are really in difficulty now with the amount of debt they've got. Remember that for the US debt, that's $1 trillion now in terms of interest payments. So about a fifth of tax take. It's just paying the debt now. So you can see that it's pretty much unsustainable. And that's really the point. So we've got to the point where the amount of debt in the system is very, very hard and high and difficult. And China's got a similar problem. Japan, of course, is right at the top there with its significant 229% debt to GDP. And it's worth just making the point that in the US, there's a massive amount of maturity of debt rolling off. About a third of all debt outstanding over the next little while. And the question will be, what price will they have to pay to be able to actually get that debt refinanced? And that really is the nadir about what's happening with the US dollar and to an extent the US economy.
Yeah, that's an outstanding, just crazy number, $10 trillion, 33% in the next year. How is this going to affect markets? You know, gold and silver have already gone parabolic, which we've got to, the political stuff, inflation. I mean, this is just really has all the setup for another crazy year ahead with all this playing out.
Yeah, and just on the next crazy slide, you know, the US dollar index, as you can see, is dropping there quite considerably. It's at a several year low. And it's interesting that Trump said, I don't mind a weak dollar, that's fine. Scott Bessent, who runs the Treasury, said, no, we want a strong dollar. So there's a really interesting contention there. Powell refused to engage with regard to the strength of the dollar or not in the press conference overnight, which I thought was quite interesting. Doesn't want to make any political comments at all. But you can see there, the dollar index is down. You can see also that the bond yields, this is the 10-year, is quite high. Now, it's been up and down, but the point is, that it looks as though the longer term interest rates will stay high. And that's one of the reasons why I think we don't see a rate cut in the US anytime soon. And that would be a bit upsetting to Trump, who wants a much, much weaker interest rate because he wants to run the economy really, really hot. And that, of course, is the problem. I mean, hot means higher inflation. Inflation is up. And if you look at the Japan story, you can also see there that the 10-year in Japan is up. There's a big question about whether the carry trade is now reversing. In other words, will people be effectively looking to switch out and switch away from Japan as well? So you can see some of these international tensions. And by the way, even the 2-year story in Australia, our rates are also up. No surprise, given the fact that we're going to see probably a rate rise. All four banks are now calling, as we'll see later, they're calling a rate rise the next time when the RBA meets. So all in all, you can see here that there are tensions in terms of the bond market, tensions in terms of the exchange rate. Obviously, the Aussie is doing very well. You know, we're above 70 now for the first time for a long time. And remember that if we have a strong Aussie dollar, that does actually make our exports effectively more expensive. So we actually earn less on them when it comes back. So that's interesting, a little observation that some people might want to think about. And the final point there, in comparison, gold, of course, to the moon. This chart's a bit old, I'm afraid. I didn't update it this morning. It's now, 5,500 or something? I mean, it's ridiculous the way it's gone up.
Yeah.
And there's almost no rhyme or reason other than everyone's looking for some safe haven. And, a lot of people, of course, are now piling in, including some retail investors. They're also finding it's quite difficult to get gold because there's only limited supply. And so they're paying a lot more than the spot price. It's also worth noting on the next slide, if you compare the world reserve for gold versus US dollar claims, there's a significant pivot going on. And just to give another context, if you think about the gold versus S&P total return, well, the total return from gold over the next, let's say from 2000, massively higher relative to the stock market. So there's something really powerful going on here, very complex to try and understand possibly. And by the way, silver's following on, and it is fascinating to see now that the silver gold ratio is beginning to move. People are beginning to wake up to, well, silver follows other precious metals too. So we've got this really bifurcation between the US dollar, future of the US economy, is the US dollar effectively going to lose its preeminence, and people are looking for alternatives.
Yeah, I probably think gold and silver need to have a little bit of a breather soon with those charts that have just gone absolutely parabolic. And well done to everyone that's, stacked over the years and copped flak when it's particularly silver didn't move for ages. But I think now it's gone up something like 25-30 trillion in market cap for those two precious metals assets in the last 12-18 months. And so that's a lot of unrealized profit for investors that can now rotate in and pay off debt, or you know, just have some cash on the sidelines in uncertain times, or you can get these pretty high yields. The other thing there, as you said, with all that debt maturing, if people are going to go, we're going to have to offer us a better rate, that forces interest rates up. So a lot of these people can probably get 5% whatever now, pretty risk-free. This has been a monster run, as you say. Whenever you see retail going crazy and it's in the news and whatever, it's probably time to at least sell some and take some profits. But it's been an absolutely spectacular rise.
Yeah, and it's the debasement trade, right? So people are losing confidence in the world order. They're losing confidence in particularly the US and what they're doing, and looking for alternatives. And it is interesting that people are now talking about, well, there are opportunities maybe to invest in Asia or in Europe or Australia or whatever, but you know, not the US. But yeah, the interesting question is, at what point should people capitalize some of those values? Because, you know, there's a chance at some point that things are going to pivot back the other way. And if they do, it could pivot quite quickly. We also note that some of the big investment houses are actually changing their positioning now with regard to the expectation of where gold is going to go from here. So some are still saying it's going to go higher. Others are saying, no, this is a bubble, it will come back. So fascinating times, uncertain times.
Yeah. And, all right, crude oil.
Yeah, so talking about uncertain times, of course, we've now got the latest with regard to Trump and the Middle East. He's talking about maybe active military intervention again. That's one of the reasons why oil prices have started to go up. Although, you know, they're at still relatively low levels compared with where they were a little while ago. But again, more uncertainty, another reason to be a little bit cautious. And I think we're going to see more of this. He's basically saying he could intervene and relatively quickly.
Yeah. All stocks are still near those record highs, though, as that fiat currency just turns into toilet paper.
Well, that's right. So the debasement trade means that the stock markets are going through the roof. So the MSCI Global Index is touching an all-time high. The S&P 500 pretty much there. It came back very slightly overnight, but not much at all. And even the ASX in Australia doesn't quite, reach its highs from a little while ago, but it's still up there. Why, you've got to ask, why is it? Well, it's partly, of course, the fact that the governments are printing money, that liquidity has got to go somewhere. The AI trade is still very strong, although interestingly we had some results overnight again from the US with regard to places, people like Meta and Microsoft. They're both continuing to invest huge in terms of the infrastructure of AI. And the question is, will that infrastructure investment flow into real returns? Maybe it won't. There are other AI stories that look a little bit more wobbly. But the truth is that the stock markets at the moment are bubbly, but they could still bubble even higher for the reasons we've been talking about.
Yeah, I've seen a few of the AI chatbots try to start to sell ads and that sort of thing, because they've just outlaid all this capital, hundreds of billions, and they're starting to realize, well, it's a pretty competitive market and there's a lot you can do for free or pretty low cost subscriptions. And is it really going to return that capital? As you say, it is amazing what it can do. And I think it's nefarious a lot of the time what it's going to be used for sure. But yeah, I think it probably is. I lean more towards the bubble side of it for the AI investing stocks. Yeah.
It's worth just thinking about. So the amount of capital investment in the US that there's happened so far is about 3% equivalent of GDP, right? Now, Australia, when they invested big, the mining sector in the 2000s, we got up to 8% of GDP. So you can see how distorted our strategy was in Australia, and look what's happened since. But it is, my point is, there is still headroom here for more investment over a period of time. But the quantum of the investment is huge. The demand for energy is huge, and the demand for water and cooling is huge. And the likely depreciation cycles on the AI investments, particularly some of the chips, is probably a lot shorter than, for example, investing in building a new mine. So you've got to say that there is a significant bubble element in this. There'll be some people who will win and some people who will lose, but this is definitely one to watch. And it's another reason why we've got this huge, huge inflated story with regard to values.
Yeah, and Greenland, as you mentioned there, to build AI data centers and keep them cool is another reason I think they want that Greenland base. Yeah,
exactly right. Now, just to keep everyone up to date, of course, the Bitcoin story is a little bit sideways. Hasn't dropped much more from where it was in December. But I do think it's quite fascinating to also note that we've got UBS coming out to say they're going to actually explore offering investment via crypto for private banking clients. And, you know, there is still a story here of some developments going on in this sector, although it's being rather masked by everything else at the moment. So I always say to people is keep an eye on this as well. This is not over.
Yeah, I guess from my point of view, it's just crypto has been so centralized and captured now by these big banks and BlackRock and ETFs, and it's just lost its way from building out this decentralized anti-bank, anti-government system that a lot of us that were early would have hoped. So that's something I'm still watching. I think still think it's our best hope as an alternative system and whatnot. But yeah, there's no doubt it's been captured and centralized by these same bankers we're trying to defeat.
Yeah, they are making a lot of money from end investors now through this. And that, of course, means that they're playing the same old games with the cryptocurrencies as well. So that's, it's a big, big change. We need to think about how that's going to play out. Talking about big change, if you look at the Australian inflation story, we had some data out yesterday which showed that the inflation for both goods and services is up. And in fact, the trimmed mean inflation from the latest one is much higher than what the RBA thought it was going to be and the target band. And if you look at it both another way, if you look at both the tradables and the non-tradables, in other words, the stuff that's actually in the country versus the stuff that's overseas, our inflation in Australia is significantly higher than people were expecting. And that means we're going to see rate rises. As I said earlier on, most of the banks are now predicting a rate rise when the RBA meets next week. And it's just worth noting that if you look at it from a market and administered, in other words, which part of the economy is the government able to intervene in and invest in, inflation is massively high. 7.55% is some people are suggesting, compared with 2.58 for the market. So this is very much a significant intervention from government that's creating the inflation. It's homegrown inflation now. It's not due to what's happening in the US and Trump and all those things. This is a homegrown problem. And Jim Chalmers was spinning like a top when this number came out and tried to explain why it wasn't his problem at all. It was somebody else's problem. Just let me make the point that if you compare the Australian trend, 3.63 is the year-on-year average in Australia, 2.7 if you look at all the other advanced economies. And if you look at it on a country-by-country basis, Australia is leading the way now at 3.8% relative to the UK at 3.4%. We have, you know, inflation now sitting at the highest in the developed world. There's a reason for it. It's bad government policy.
Yeah, 100%. Australia seems to be this testbed for all these, whether it's new laws or this monetary policy. And, you know, we've just mismanaged everything so badly. And I think a lot of it's on purpose. It seems like they're trying to kind of deliberately destroy the economy. I just don't know how anyone with common sense could mismanage this unlimited wealth that we have with our resources and everything. We should be the wealthiest, happiest, freest country in the world. And we're going declining the fastest, as you know, with all the standards and all your data.
Yes, and the recent intervention in terms of what you can and what you can't say, you know, it's another example of tightening all down rather than having open debate and bad policies coming through. You know, it's worth highlighting that the jobs market was strong and that was already enough to signal a risk. And now everybody's pretty much saying that, yeah, rates are going up. ANZ, Westpac, NAB, CBA are all now calling for the rates to go up. And the markets, if you look at the interbank, they're talking rates 4% plus in June 2027. Now, that's a prediction. You know, it may not happen, but it's an indication of what's going on. And just to sort of talk about just how bad the policy is, this is another very important story that Chris Richardson really brought to the floor. There is a massive budget error that they don't talk about. But $47.8 billion of government spending was misbudgeted. And you can see there the little blue chart just shows how big this miss is. And that's a bunch of things. But basically, this is to do with bad management. It's not new policies. It's not to do with externalities. This is just bad management. And to my mind, we've got really big questions that should be being asked of the government. But of course, the opposition is in pieces. and they are getting away with blue murder at the moment. The fall of the subsidies for the electricity particularly shifted inflation down through the election so that people felt better than they probably should have. And now for the next year, that will unravel, which means that inflation will be higher. We've got this budget misallocation and mismanagement. We've got too much public sector investment, which is crowding out private sector investment. So the Australian economy is now really, really on its back. And yet Chalmers and the government wants to spin their way through it rather than actually deal with the real issues. Shame on them.
Yeah, there's been some great citizen journalists researching the fraud in the NDIS and even in America with some of their government programs. They go to these addresses and there's no one there. And some of these regions where the percent of people that are on these government programs, it's just been completely rorted. It's not doing what it was meant to do. People are just abusing this system. And you talk to friends that work on the NDIS. I think I've said this before. They're getting paid these huge amounts of money to sit on the couch while someone plays video games or sleep there overnight and just make sure nothing happens. And it's like, these are things that people used to do, looking after each other with friends and family and carers and that type of thing. So it's just wild watching this, probably going to be the thing that really bankrupts us if it keeps going on this trend.
Yes, and just the proportion of people with mental health issues and concerns. And then the ability, for example, in the UK, a lot of them can then get a lot of money from government because of the issues that they've got. Now, I'm not saying those issues aren't real, but the way that they're being dealt with and the amount of money that's being flowed into that. And no one's asking about the root causes. Why is it that we've got these mental health issues and, you know, what's causing it? Well, I would think there are a number of very significant issues there that we could talk about. But the fact is that we're just throwing a lot of money onto solutions that don't really get to the heart of the issue. Or another one example, with all the highly processed food, a lot of illness now is directly linked to people eating bad stuff. But nobody wants to actually deal with the root cause issues. We're trying to then fix the problem, and that means health expenditures up again. We are not getting to the root cause issues economically or societally, and that's a really big problem.
Oh, 100%. And I could go on a rant about all that for hours, Martin, about the mental health and the relationship to the cost of living and the stress that people are under and not getting sunlight and on and on and on. But we'll save that topic for another day.
Exactly. Now, just in terms of the rate increases, I will make the point also that banks have already put their fixed rates up. So some banks have put up their fixed rates by 0.7%. That gives you an indication of the forward expectation of rates. So anybody who thinks that this is a one and done increase are probably going to be misled. We could see two or maybe three. The markets are saying 2.3 rate rises of 25 basis points, which is pretty much unwinding all the cuts. So anybody who's budgeting for mortgages at the moment and thinking about their future for forward expenditure with a mortgage, be careful.
Absolutely. Just when people were maybe hoping it was going to go down, it looks like Australia's going to be the first place where it goes back up, as you said.
And just on that, remember that one of the big schemes was to give first-time buyers a 5% deposit. And guess what? People piled in. So the next chart just shows you that the proportion of properties available below and above the price cap changed. So a lot of people piled in and bought the cheaper properties with the, below the price cap. A lot of people have got these big mortgages, very, very tight, expecting rates to drop, suddenly now going to be finding that rates are rising. And so what this is doing is giving a sugar hit to some sections of the market. It's pushed a lot of people into the market at the wrong point in the cycle. And a lot of people are going to find it's really, really uncomfortable for them. So that's sort of very important for people to understand. And unfortunately, I'm still seeing some first-time buyers who believe the government spin, the O'Neill doctrine, prices will never go down. Well, maybe we will see prices begin to move in the other direction. Now, we'll see.
I think we're going to see a bit of sort of swallow your pride. And if this all sort of continues in this direction in the next year or two, people moving back in with their parents or living at home longer and, you know, things that are a bit taboo in Australia, you've got to get on the property ladder as soon as you can. And it's just going to be pretty normal for people to have to start to find ways to survive through this cost of living crisis until we get some sort of you know, radical change in government policy and that type of thing.
Yes. Well, let's hope we do get a radical change. But unfortunately, the opposition is just so fragmented that, you know, One Nation's doing better than the other people. So who knows? Now, just on the property side, I want to just highlight, I made a show called The Inconvenient Truth about property investing in Australia, because people were still being spun up to buy investment property. I did a lot of work with a lot of people here. A lot of people are losing money on investment properties. And it's worth noting that it's the investment property story that actually has been one of the most significant. And if you look at the growth in credit, guess what? Investment credit growth is stronger than owner-occupied credit growth. So we've got this real problem at the moment that the amount of momentum in the property market from investors has been quite strong, and yet the gross rental returns are down. This is according to totality. But the net rental yields, which is what I calculate, the net rental yields are actually negative for more than half of property investors now. And in fact, because of the rising costs of mortgages and other costs to do with the property, including strata fees, etc., etc., more property investors are losing money rather than not. This is a city capital average. It's going down. So property investors are actually really up against it. And I do think that that's one of the reasons why Melbourne property prices are continuing to drop and will continue to drop for some time.
Yeah, I like the that slide there about the credit growth versus owner-occupier. I think that's really important, because this is exactly what you'd expect to see when wages aren't rising and cost of living crisis is hitting the average, you know, group of people, and yet we've got the stock market and those people that already have wealth, you know, maybe they've got some gold and silver or whatever, their portfolios are higher, they're coming in to buy more properties, and absolutely, that doesn't really help house people that need it.
And they are competing directly with those first-time buyers. The rate on their mortgage, those first-time buyers, they're higher because the banks still think the risk is higher. So they're having to pay a lot more. Plus, of course, it's 95%. They're still having to pay the whole lot. So, yeah, it's a mess. Government intervention. Get out of property, government. Just let the market be the market. And talking about the market be the market, it's just worth highlighting that the time on market in Perth and Brisbane, 20 days and 13 days, just shows you that those markets are still quite hot. We will, I think, see some changes ahead, which is quite interesting. And I am of the view that both Brisbane and Perth are actually in a bubble. And I think we're going to see some little bit of a change of trajectory. I'm seeing some early signs. So watch this space. Yeah, just a little one. It's worth highlighting. Deposit rates, have they gone up? Well, a little bit, but not a lot. So the margins between the loan rates and deposit rates are actually still not moving. And the banks are being accused of being very unfair and not giving good information about interest on savings. A lot of people have interest in the banks, but on very, very low rates. So shop around is what I would say. And of course, the industry is also just talking about what's going on. Home buyers should be a little bit careful. Stern warnings, you know, slash your lifestyle spending is the advice. You know, well, yeah, you've got to be a little bit more careful than that. Because if you look at my stress trend data to the end of December, you can see there that the amount of pressure on people is extremely high. Rental stress still sitting at 3/4 of those in the rental sector have cash flow pressures, and about half of households in the mortgage sector have pressure. Interest rates are going to go up from this point. Cost of living continues to rise because inflation is very high. Real wages growth hardly growing at all. So people, be careful, be cautious in this year. This is not going to be a comfortable year for many. Plus, of course, we've got those international forces that we've been talking about. So there's a lot to watch.
Yeah, well, you said government stay out of the property market, Martin, but I want government out of every aspect of our lives, and I think things will start to work a lot better. But
You know the old quote, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you.
Yeah. Well, guys, hope you've enjoyed that one. Links to follow Martin and all his work down below, as well as my stuff, and we'll talk to you again next month. Cheers, Martin.
Cheers.